It's 10:15 p.m. in a nuclear sea vent deep below the Pacific Ocean, and you're listening to Night Call.
Welcome to Night Call, a podcast for your strange days and lonely nights. My name is Emily Yoshida. I am in New York, and with me, as always, on the other line, I have
Molly Lambert and
Tess Lynch. Hello.
Hello.
What's up?
Apparently, the world or civilization is coming to an end by 2050. This is not on our news, but this
new
is news
report.
To me just now. This is breaking news.
Breaking news. The end is in sight. Civilization will probably come to an end by 2050 because, like, climate change.
I plan to also come to an end around 2050, so all good, all good.
It doesn't say definitively. It says probably.
This is kinda a Vice article. This is Vice who's giving us this report.
I will say I also haven't read the article yet. I have just seen it tweeted a million times, but I'm speculating that it's about climate change. Refugees and stuff, and how we will have used all the resources of the earth at a certain point, and then people will turn on each other as they have already been doing.
Now that we're kind of starting to get some perspective dates of, like, worst case scenario when everything's gonna go to shit, I'm sort of bummed out that I'm gonna be in my 60s for it. I kind of wish I was, like, a little more.
I wish you were a young person for the apocalypse.
No, old? Older?
But just so that I could, like, outrun people and stuff. Outrun the reavers. I'm going to be toast really quickly.
Not my fantasy. Not my fantasy at all. Survivalism fantasies are not my fantasy because I'm like, I would go limp and be the first to die.
No, you wouldn't. You're
you don't give yourself enough credit.
Yeah.
You know, that is true. And I actually am in dangerous scenarios. I always, like, summon inner pluck.
You do?
Yeah.
It's because you're a redhead.
Yeah,
it's one of your trademarks.
Stereotyping, but also true.
Yep. Well, just to clarify, this Vice report says the headline is "New report suggests, quote, high likelihood of human civilization coming to an end in 2050," and it
Define
was written by
high.
It's a former fossil fuel executive, and it was also backed by the former chief of Australia's military.
I don't know.
Oh,
about
that
these
sounds bad.
Yeah.
It's backed by the Australian military. Maybe they're trying to foment fear.
Yeah.
Could be.
Well, because Australians are racist as hell, or not to generalize, some of them aren't. But Australia as a country is like America in a
turned up a notch.
Yeah, just like America in a weirdy mirror. You know, it's like the same but with different animals and types of, you know.
It's like America, but different animals. That's a really, really good way to sum up Australia.
It's 100%. And also redheads are plucky and, like, we're a totally straightforward science podcast now. Mm-hmm. No.
Well, speaking of science, I wanted to give some real science about why does the moon keep flashing us? This
why?
Is an article
Gassy
from Live Science.
Gassy flashes.
There's something flashing us on the moon, and we don't know what it is. We have known about the mysterious flashes since at least the late 1960s. Small regions of the lunar surface would suddenly get brighter or darker without obvious explanations. The scientists' survey of the flashes and dimming, which they called lunar transient phenomena, and they have emitted light that is usually described as reddish or pinkish, sometimes with a sparkling or flowing appearance. The average duration of an event is some 20 minutes, but it may
it's
persist
like a little kombucha burp.
Well, apparently there's a new telescope. Scientists have been trying to figure out why this happens for 5 decades since they were first discovered in the 60s. But they are now known to happen a few times a week. And a new team of astronomers has a new telescope in Spain specifically to find out why. It might be related to the moonquakes that we were talking about last week. This is so weird. I was just reading about earthquakes because there were some earthquakes in the Inland Empire. There were like 30 little earthquakes.
In Riverside last night.
Yeah. And I
Could
was
you
like,
feel them?
I felt one.
No, I'm just like, we're overdue, obviously.
I mean, maybe I'm crazy. I it was apparently they were very small. I shouldn't have been able to feel them in Los Angeles, but both my husband and I were like, earthquake. And then I checked Twitter and I was like, yes, there is an earthquake.
Well, I was reading
but it was
about
in Riverside.
I was reading about earthquake weather, which is like a sort of pseudoscientific phenomenon where people predict earthquakes because they're like, oh, the weather is weird. There's going to be an earthquake. It's totally not scientific. It's never been proven. It doesn't really work. There's nothing you can really use to predict an earthquake like far in advance.
But not far in advance.
Not
animal
far in advance
is a good predictor.
Animal behavior, but also animals act weird all the time, so it's hard to distinguish.
Makes you very paranoid.
But sometimes they hide under the bed. That's my experience. It's like they get weird and they start hiding and you're like, what's up with the animals? And then there's an earthquake and you're like, that's what was up. But I was reading about another phenomenon called earthquake light, which is real, which has been noticed when there's an earthquake. There's a light phenomenon that's described as being like colored light. It sounds just like this.
Where can you see it in the sky or is it like
around
the Earth?
It's like a aurora type thing.
It's like an aurora you can see over in the sky during an earthquake, supposedly. This sounds just like that. Maybe this is like a moonquake.
That is very interesting. Oh, Molly, good hypothesis. That's really good.
Thanks, guys.
We should take this to the scientific community.
Well, if you actually know any science about the moon, more science about it. We should have some scientists on this
podcast.
A moonologist, a lunarian.
My friend Emma Cunningham explained the Northern Lights to me, and I couldn't understand it at all. But
yeah, I love the Northern Lights.
It's
so cool. Think about the Northern Lights.
It's one of those things where it's like even when you have it explained, it doesn't make it any less cool or weird or magical.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So that is the Moon Minute.
Well, just to dip back into the apocalypse real quick, or like I guess maybe both the moon and Earth are currently going through it right now.
Sorry, I have a really bad joke I have to do right now.
Okay.
Maybe it's going through moonopause.
Oh no.
Those hot gas
there
flashes.
We have it.
Yeah,
that's why we're here today. Okay. I was going down a rabbit hole for completely separate, but also night call related reasons, I now realize. And I discovered, this is not at all news, but I just wanted to share it with everybody. I became aware of the Florida Dome Homes. You can look them up. They are officially called the Cape Romano Dome Homes. They're somewhere off the coast. Now they are off the coast of Florida. They were originally on the beach, but thanks to a couple of hurricanes and some of that good old glacier melt, they are now in the water.
Well, wait. Technically, it's one home, but it's six domes that are connected into one house.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's a dome home. It's a dome home, singular.
But there's many domes.
I should say domes home.
Yes.
So I would highly recommend a Google image search of these. They now just like look like these sort of rickety, about to fall over. They kind of look like that Greek style of like adobe dome.
They're really cool.
On stilts. The guy who built them to be completely self-sufficient. So they were like very ahead of their times. This is like in the early 80s, maybe he started to build them.
Yes. Bob Lee is the guy's name.
Bob Lee. Yeah. I couldn't get
it. I don't think these are featured, but there's a movie that I really love called Home Movie. It's a documentary made by the people who made American Movie.
Yes.
It's the movie they made right afterwards. And it's just going to a bunch of people who built weird or unusual homes and interviewing them about it. And they're all really cool. And this one isn't in it, but there's somebody else who has kind of like a UFO house that's kind of a similar, kind of like proto solar paneled.
Yeah.
Really cool.
There are photos in this. We'll link to this Dwell article about it. It has some photos of the inside of the house when it was still functional and when Bob Lee's family lived there. And it looks really nice. It looks
chill. Total night call headquarters.
Yes, absolutely. Like these tiled floors. Looks very Mediterranean, but it's like, you know, all the rooms are round, obviously. And you've got these like, you know, 360 degree views of the water and you're in Florida and everything kind of looks hazy and pink and it looks great. And now they are kind of these abandoned little, they look like if jellyfish could have fossils, they look like that. Like, totally.
If jellyfish had bones.
Yeah.
Yes. If jellyfish had bones.
Oh my God, imagine if jellyfish had bones. That's terrifying.
I don't think they'd be jellyfish anymore, honestly.
When jellyfish have bones, it's over for us bitches.
You know, they will be here long after because they are the oldest.
I know.
They shall be the first and last.
I saw a really good video recently of a comb jellyfish eating another comb jellyfish, just like bumping up against one and then be like, oh. Like, I encountered something else in my environment. I will eat it. It was like, it me.
Subsumed.
Anyway, I would, check out the dome home. It is super cool. I wish that it was anywhere near salvageable because I would totally be putting in a bid for it to be our night call headquarters. But I think it's just, you just have to let it go out to sea.
Well, there was an interesting thing at the end about how they tried to raise money to sink it and make it
an artificial reef.
So when we get our gill transplants and we can breathe underwater.
I'm wondering if that's not something that could be revived successfully now. I wonder when that fundraising campaign happened.
Gill transplants?
No. I wonder when they proposed turning it into an artificial reef, because I feel like now people would be very receptive to that. Whereas a few years ago, when we were so blithe, we were like, no.
I would for real like some gill transplants and to just live in there. That's my dream.
Oh, I don't think I could live underwater even with gills.
Reverse Little Mermaid.
I'd be so pruny.
No, you wouldn't, because you'd live underwater.
Right. And then you would get pruny fingers. And you'd have to deal with that feeling of the thirsty skin, even though it's just terrible. I couldn't.
Maybe you'd
do it.
Put sand on your body. It's like opposite world.
I'd need gills and scales to make this work. It's way too much work.
Guys, I wanted to talk about one more news item before we move on. And this was, I think this came out a week ago. I think I read this on the train coming back from night call last week. But there was a big article in the New York Times about Peter Max, the commercial artist of the 60s and 70s, the premier commercial artist of the 60s and 70s, and how he now has dementia and his children have basically they've completely tried to buy off his legacy. They are having him sign art that he did not make so that they can sell it on cruise ships.
Hold up. It's his son, Adam, and two business associates are doing that. His daughter, Libra, is on his, she's on his side. Libra.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Libra is the scales of truth here.
Is this King Lear?
There's Cosmo and, yes, it is. It's King Lear with op art. So first of all, I clicked on this because I was so curious, because in my neighborhood in Brooklyn, there is a silver Jaguar that has a New York license plate that's always parked on the street somewhere around me that says Peter Max. It's like a vanity plate that says Peter Max. And I've always been like, does Peter Max live in my neighborhood and in Brooklyn? And then I immediately opened it up and I was like, okay, what's going on with Peter Max? What's going on in the, you know, not at all glamorous corner of Park Slope in which I live? But apparently whoever has that car has nothing to do with, or at least is not associated with his studio, which is all in the Upper West Side, because of course it is. it's a wild story. It also just I don't know.
There's a part about how they tried to they tried to poison him with Brazil nuts.
Okay, so wait, guys, I went really deep on this. Let me just
say. Great.
There's so many. Well, I took a lot of notes on this story because I was like, everyone is a villain in this story.
There's
except
a lot
Libra.
Of
yes. Let's and, just be real.
Right, and Peter Max.
Well, Peter Max is not a villain, but
he's not
he
a good
kinda,
guy.
He's a sellout.
Yeah. Well, he's a sellout, and then he tried to, basically pled guilty to tax evasion.
Well, that's
and
whatever.
After that.
Well, how is he a sellout?
Oh, because he was an artist who very quickly was, he was kind of counterculture in the beginning.
He's the last episode of Mad Men.
Exactly.
He's like what Don Draper is dreaming of when he is meditating at Esalen.
Yeah.
He was like one of the first of that wave to just be like, I'm going to team up with the CEO of Chrysler.
Okay.
I'm going to, I'm going to do advertisements.
Okay.
That's going to be my thing. And then he became really into spending his money. So when he divorced his first wife, he was like, I will just build a staircase connecting my apartment and the adjacent apartment so we can lead separate lives but co-parent our children. It's like
it's
nothing
just like Tim
terrible.
Burton and Helena Bonham Carter.
Yeah,
just a rich.
He was
just a rich dick.
He just became a kind of a rich dick. So then He has two children, Adam and Libra. And Libra, I guess he, you know, Peter Max is like an animal rights activist and stuff. Libra kind of inherited that, moved to LA, was doing that, wasn't super involved in the business, even though she and Adam and Peter were all running the company. So Libra didn't really have much to do with it. Adam, you know, eventually Peter Max got Alzheimer's and became unable to really, you know, do his art or even kind of function at these events that he was going to, most of which were on cruise lines where people would get drunk and bid on Peter Max paintings. So his son at some point kind of basically put the studio on lockdown. So nobody could see what was going on inside, and then had all of these minimum wage workers making like replica Peter Max paintings, and then he would have his dad come in and sign them. But then, you know, I guess Peter Max is, I'm not sure if he's still married to her, but his second wife, Mary, started accusing Adam of, you know, basically kidnapping Peter Max because they couldn't find him, couldn't contact him. And so all of the court records are cited in the New York Times investigation, and that's where the poisoning by Brazil Nut comes in. So Adam is like, hey, it's not just me here who is being abusive to my dad. Look at my mom. She is making him smoothies where she puts in whole Brazil nuts, hoping that he'll choke. Apparently, she was recorded talking to someone about hiring a guy to like intimidate Peter Max and, you know, break his hand so he wouldn't be able to paint. It's this whole
it's so
big
crazy.
Mess.
It feels like there's a lot of stories like this recently about elder abuse with,
yes.
famous people. Yeah. There's a Stan Lee one, and the guy just got convicted.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
I was following that for a while as well.
Yeah. It's some dark stuff. The idea of the Norwegian, isn't it like a Norwegian cruise
yes.
line? That's like a Peter Max themed boat. Like a picture of it.
Right.
It's just like,
yeah.
It's so, it just sounds like, part of me is like, would I want to be on that? And then I'm like, no, absolutely not. And then when it's just filled with all this like, forged art that like some old man with
right.
dementia has
well,
been forced yeah. like at gunpoint basically to sign. It's
right.
just like, oh God, it's so dark, all of it.
It's like Velvet Buzzsaw.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like there's so much creepy bullshit in the regular art world though, mm-hmm. too. You know what I mean? I'm
but
like,
none
well,
of it's
every
this, like Baroque, I feel.
No, but every big artist has like an army of like underpaid, you know, lower tier people fabricating all the art
right.
for them. Like,
I think
they don't make any of the art
they
ever.
Tried
they
tried to kind of be like
it.
Damien Hirst. It's like people build art for artists who dictate how to do it, but then this is like too many degrees of separation even for
yeah.
that realm.
Yeah.
Because
if you're not even conscious of making the art, then I don't know. That's
yes.
something else. I don't know. It's
well,
it's a pretty wild story.
The new Katy Perry video for Never Really Over is very Peter Max-ish.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
It's all like kind of looks like a paisley scarf with
it's,
faces in it.
It's very like the Coke commercial from The Last Mad Men that we were just talking about.
Yeah.
It's very like 70s, early 70s, late 60s. Also, the song is good. Speaking of pop stars.
Yes.
I flew on a very special UFO to England where I saw the new Black Mirror episode that nobody has seen yet.
Well, not as of this recording.
Not but nobody. But it's now out, which means everybody can talk about it. But it means I'm, you know, projecting this to you from before.
You've seen the Black Mirror episode is what you're saying.
What I'm saying is I've seen this Black Mirror episode.
That is now out on Netflix.
That is now out on Netflix and you can watch too. It is called Rachel, Jack, and Ashley 2. And it stars Miley Cyrus as a pop star named Ashley O. And this will be another Black Mirror episode that people will be like, how did this predict exactly what is happening right this moment? Because it does eerily touch on some issues of many things we were just talking about in terms of like ownership, creative ownership, who profits off of an artist, especially one that has a lot of people profiting off of them and a motive in continuing, making that person continue to work. Miley plays Ashley O, and the best thing, one of the many good things about this episode, which is very Nightcall bait-y, is that she sings a pop song that is Head Like a Hole by Nine Inch Nails with new lyrics that are Hannah Montana-y.
Ooh.
Like, oh, I thought she just did a cover of Head Like a Hole.
No, it's so much better than that. It's like they show her singing the song, and I was like, what is this song? It's so catchy and also familiar.
They play it in the trailer, right?
Maybe, yeah. I've had it in my head since then, and I like couldn't share it with anybody. Mm-hmm. But it's like it's called On a Roll. I'm on a roll. I'm taking control. Doing my best. Achieving my goals.
Oh my god!
And they play it a million times in the episode, and it's really good. This episode touches on many things we all talk about in terms of. Pop
Wait,
stars.
So what's the prep? Like, what happened? What happens to her in the story without the premise, spoiling too much of it?
Sure, without spoiling too much, it's a dual narrative about Ashley O and a teenage girl who is her fan. Mm-hmm. And so it's mostly from the point of view of the girl who's the fan, but it's about Ashley is about to turn 25, and that is when she gains control of her business, basically. Mm. And she has an aunt who has a conservatorship, and the aunt maybe is being manipulative of her to try and ensure that the money never stops.
Mm-hmm. Dang, it sounds good. I miss Black Mirror. I've been like really after Bandersnatch, I thought that they were going to release the next three episodes like right away. And I was just kind of tapping my fingers.
This one's really good. I cried at the end. but it's also, without spoiling too much, it's maybe not as depressing as some Black Mirrors. If you're mm-hmm. a person who doesn't like to watch Black Mirror because you find it too depressing.
The two depressing Black Mirrors are difficult.
I think this is not that one. It's very good. It is funny also. But it also concerns a robot, a home robot called Ashley 2. The titular Ashley 2, which
so
is
they make an AI of her, basically,
yeah,
or something like that, like to continue to be able to make money off of her. Is that the basic premise of it? Or
it's like they make an AI of her. Yes, that's the basic premise. They make an AI of her by like scanning her consciousness,
right,
and putting it in like a little Alexa home robot that's in like this little Wall-E that like sits on your desk and is like, hey, what are you doing? Hey, talk to me about your feelings in Miley's voice.
Well, like, this is even happening now, though. Like, this was happening a couple years ago. Like, I feel like, who was it who gave an interview about this after being in a Marvel movie where they were like, I realized that now my entire body and likeness has been scanned by Marvel and Disney. And therefore, and it belongs to them. Like, this was a part of the contract because they had to, you know, make a digital recreation
right,
of me for effects.
Right, they own your likeness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your likeness. And they can essentially make anything with that likeness. They can simulate your, you know, they can do the Princess Leia thing from the end of Rogue One or whatever. They can you know, generate a new you.
So that is extremely what this is about.
Yeah.
And the fact that it stars Miley makes it also kind of like, it's very meta, but not annoying. It's funny and good. And I'm excited for everybody else to see it. This segues seamlessly into our discussion of a movie we all watched called Simone.
I would say we watched Simone because of this.
We watched Simone because of this. I did not remember, though, that while I was looking at the trivia for Simone, and one of the things about it was that they were planning to market it as that they had generated the first AI actress. And then it was right around the same time as the Final Fantasy movie, you know, when they were like, we're going to make CGI movies with entirely CGI people.
Yeah.
And SAG got so mad about it.
Bless the Screen Actors Guild. I am a member of this great force that I love.
SAG was legit concerned about actors being replaced with CGI. And so they forced like Simone to say like, no, this is a real actress playing this part, which it obviously is because it's not at all believable as CGI. Yeah, what'd you think of Simone?
Oh, my God. Well, I saw this movie in theaters when it came out. I think that they were really pushing that it was like, oh, it's the guy who did Gattaca. So it's going to be like fun, but also like a thinking person's sci-fi thing. And it is very much like it's totally a Black Mirror episode before there was Black Mirror. Like,
what it's about is interesting.
Right. And it's the hilarious thing is that it was not well received at the time. And I think that that's probably due to the fact that it's not a very good movie. But a lot of the reviews
are just cite that it's so far fetched or it could never happen and blah 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 blah.
Well,
and
that's
it's just
not
like,
the problem with it at all.
No, the script is really bad.
The script is really bad. The tone is super weird.
The
makes
tone
no
is
sense.
Very strange.
But not in like a fun way. It made me appreciate Under the Silver Lake.
Right.
Yes. No, there have been a ton of movies recently where I've been like, Under the Silver Lake actually.
You're like,
was
at least
one of the...
it gave me a feeling.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it tries to dip into satire every now and then and just like cannot nail it. Like a combination of just like, I don't know, it feels like sometimes Al Pacino might not be fully present in the role. And then,
but it's also like,
I can't blame Pacino. He was so game for this. Like he was working with a green screen for a lot of it, doing a great job there.
I feel like everyone who made it thought they were making a really important movie.
Yeah.
And I was also shocked to realize it came out in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but it
that
looks...
explained everything to me. Because
yeah.
I was like, this movie takes place in the 1999 future.
Yeah.
That then, like, wasn't going to happen in the 9/11 world.
It's got those marimbas. It's got that kind of pseudo-American Beauty score, which is very...
You know what it totally reminded me of is Paul Simon's The Rhythm of the Saints. This, like, slightly embarrassing...
Slightly.
Like, very embarrassing, like, white man on the drums kind of... It was just like...
I will say... Let me say it always. Fuck Paul Simon.
I can't. It's hard. It's hard. It's so emotionally attached.
He's a bad
to
man.
Graceland. I know.
We're 2 out of 3 for Paul Simon, unfortunately, on this
podcast.
Oh, come
on.
Sorry, Molly.
Team Los Lobos.
I think what is really tragic about Simone is that I love The Truman Show so much. I think we all like The Truman Show.
We all like The Truman Show.
And Andrew Niccol co-wrote The Truman Show. So it's
and that was actually his first movie that he wanted to get made. And then they were like, we're not going to give you $80 million to make your first movie. So it turned out to be
Gattaca. Peter Weir knocked it out of the park. He did a very good job.
No, he did great. That's what's interesting.
Peter Weir's so much better of a director, it turns out.
If Simone had had Peter Weir, I think maybe he could have spun gold out of it. I think that there's something about the, you know, Pacino's character, what's his name? Victor Taransky.
Victor Taransky. They say his name so often. How could
so
you forget?
I like, wiped it
Dad,
because
you're
I was...
Victor Taransky.
They say it a million
this
times.
This is Victor Taransky's
The
film.
Most interesting thing about this movie is all the weird people in it.
Yeah, cast of
Evan Rachel Wood plays the daughter, which means Lainey. It takes place in the Westworld universe, which makes perfect sense.
Sure, yeah.
Jay Moore is the hot-headed leading man.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Jay Moore is so such a funny. Weird choice in this movie.
And then Winona Ryder at the beginning playing the actress, the bitchy actress who storms off set creating the need for a CGI actress.
Her name is Nicola Anders. And reminder, this movie was made by Andrew
Niccol.
Yeah.
Woof, Simone, y'all.
Simone.
The crazy thing, did you guys notice? So Nicola Anders, you know, she's sort of the impetus for this whole thing of him being like, what if there was a woman I could control from beginning to end of the promotion and the production and everything? And then she, after kind of realizing that she lost out on this major chance to become a star like Simone, Nicola Anders comes back with her tail between her legs, like dressed like a serious theater person and like a black turtleneck and like a Lilith style haircut or like updo or whatever. And she does a audition for a scene that I swear to God, and I will go back and check this. I should have done that before this, but I'm pretty sure is almost word for word the audition scene from Mulholland Drive.
really?
Yeah.
That also checks out.
Which is like 1 year before, but it's like, you know, both of them end with, I wish you were dead. I wish we were both dead. And I was like, I know this scene. Oh, right. It's that other audition scene from that other movie from the same
that
weird era.
That is wild.
Yeah. I don't know.
There's a lot of like Easter eggs and stuff like that in this movie, but that did not make me like it. That's normally something that can buoy me. And also just the only funny parts are Simone's movies and their titles,
right?
Including Sunrise, Sunset, Eternity Forever, and my favorite one, her art film, I Am Pig. Which, like, I just want to watch I Am Pig.
Well, so
it's just her eating out of a trough with pigs, and that's all it is.
Well, we should back up slightly just to, like, explain what specifically this movie is about, which is that this director, Victor Taransky, want, you know, as we said, like he wishes he could have an actress he could truly control. So he gets this drive from this crazy scientist who conveniently is dying like the next day.
Who's Christopher Maloney, right?
No.
Cut Elias Koteas.
Cut it. Oh, Elias Koteas, very similar.
Yeah.
Don't cut it. It's part of
Peter,
the show.
My husband was like, how many, and what, we went on this whole tangent, but he was like, how many roles do you think that both he and Chris Maloney were up for? And it like was this big, do they hate each other? We were talking about that. We were like, oh no, we have to go back to watching Simone. We have to stop talking about this.
I watched Simone in three sittings. I usually try to just like cruise through things and I couldn't. I took a nap in the middle of it. But
it puts you to sleep.
It does. It's really middle really lags. But he gets this technology, Simulation One, which he renames Simone. And then we kind of yada yada through how he actually gets her to be in his movie. I will say that his movies that he makes are very funny in a kind of late 90s way. Like the way that they like parody what the movie thinks is like an art film.
Oh, totally.
It's pretty funny. Like there's one that's called Sunrise, Sunset, and it feels like, I don't know, is it supposed to take place in like 17th century Portugal or something like that. All of it has like Gregorian chant music
they
in the background.
They all star Jay Moore.
Jay Moore and this woman that Andrew Niccol ended up marrying, apparently.
Yeah, that is the craziest part of Simone, is finding out that he married the actress who plays Simone.
Rachel Roberts.
Did she ever do anything
else? Yes.
She was a Biotherm model. She was on Mad Men and I think CSI. She's been in stuff.
She's been in a lot of stuff. And then she was also in the music video for Bitch Better Have My Money.
That is correct. Yes.
She's the wife.
Yeah. Mads's wife.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he basically has to keep up this ruse because he couldn't just, like, tell his producer slash ex-wife is played by Catherine Keener. We all love Catherine Keener. Wonderful presence to have in even a movie like this. But she, for some reason, because it's a movie, he has to keep this from her.
And he's Simone.
Well, yes. He plays her. Simone, and he has a special
Simone
keyboard.
Let's clarify. Simone is not sentient.
Yes, no.
She's not a Hal.
No, she's not a Hal.
It's Taransky.
She's not a weird
Pacino sitting in front of a screen with her CGI face, and she repeats using the voices, canned voices of actresses of the golden age of cinema or whatever, and to mimic what he has a mimic button.
Mm-hmm.
He has a special keyboard. I also was like, I just want to know about this keyboard. There's like a mimic button, like a loop button. So it's like eventually
just an audio editing button.
But just by using his magical keyboard, he you know, everybody's responding to Simone, even though Taransky's movies are really bad. And they're just like, it doesn't matter. Put her in anything. So then he like has her ascend as a pop star and she's giving concerts as a hologram. And everyone's like weeping because it's so beautiful. But then he becomes like afraid of her success and kind of tries to like destroy her career by having her do I Am Pig and like smoking and drinking wine in like, you know, streamed interviews. And everyone's just like, look at Simone. She's so three-dimensional.
She's so real.
And now, he has her kind of imply that she's like dating Taransky to make Catherine Keener jealous.
Yeah. The one thing that I think maybe ages the least well in this movie, and you could take your pick of a lot of things, but I do think that the thing that I feel like, if this was a Black Mirror and if this premise was done now, the trajectory of her public approval would be so much different. It's a very 90s thing, and it's a very monoculture thing to have this star, this like fictional star that everybody has the exact same opinion about. Everybody from the producer who's producing the movie that she's in to like these, you know, sleazy guys who were, one of them who's Jason Schwartzman, who's like trying to get the inside scoop on who Simone is. They all are just like universally adoring of her. And
that's
feels
so
very
weird about it.
That feels very pre-internet. That feels very, even though pre-internet you would have a backlash at some point over somebody like that.
This also wasn't pre-internet, also because Evan Rachel Wood's character is like constantly being chided
she
for
loves
being on G-Chat or AIM or whatever. She loves computers.
Gamer
and she's
girl.
Reading about Pygmalion, of course. I mean, it's like,
it's so on the nose, all of it.
It's so on the nose. And it really doesn't have like almost any humor for a comedy.
No, it's because he's like fundamentally unsympathetic, I think is the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like he's a horrible, but it's like Under the Silver Lake. It's like women are objects. What if you could just make an object and tell it whatever to do, whatever you want? Oh, you're still unsatisfied? Like that yeah. could be a really interesting arc, but the way they do it as like...
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like Pacino can't save it because it's like Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip. Mm-hmm. You're like, I fundamentally can't care about like a rich asshole unless there's some sort of like humbling.
Well, yeah. also there
unless
you know,
he gets like Scrooged.
You know early on that there's really no possibility that Simone will like attain the ability to kind of differentiate. Like she's never gonna go rogue as like a robot might in a more interesting
right.
movie.
This is why the Black Mirror is good because uh-huh. it's all of these things and more.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting artifact that at least shows that we were thinking about these things before they came to pass, and also that like apparently people deem them to be completely unbelievable at the time. But like the mimic thing, I mean, it yada yada is all the tech because it doesn't, you know, obviously nobody knew how that was going to work. But like all that stuff is very, very like plausible now. You could he
it's
could
all
map
real.
His
we
face.
Have
like
we have hologram pop stars.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. We have. Hatsune Miku. We have like people go paying money to go see a hologram perform.
Oh, actually, the hologram theater on Hollywood oh. Boulevard closed.
Ooh.
What? Which was
yes.
one of the creepiest things ever. Emily was going to you just
I went
it.
There. Yeah. I heard about this on Who Weekly. Shout out to Who Weekly. Alki David got busted for trying to transport all these marijuana plants, like something like several million dollars worth of marijuana plants to the Bahamas or like Turks and Caicos or something. I can't remember.
This is the person who runs the hologram theater.
This is the person
also?
Who ran the hologram theater, it owned oh. the company that had did like the Michael Jackson hologram and everything. He's
oh, well, that checks out.
Maniac, a total maniac.
Well,
but
the
yeah.
hologram theater always seemed so fucked up to me because it only had three performers. Like, yeah. I would go by and, like, see it all the time. And I talked to the people who worked there once because I could sense it wasn't long for this world. Mm-hmm. And they were like, nobody comes, but sometimes kids come to see the Tupac show.
Ha.
But it only had three performers, and it was Tupac, Billie Holiday, and Jackie Wilson, who are all, like, black performers who died in tragic ways,
right.
which, like, seemed incredibly just fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, thought,
yeah.
Oh, you're profiting off a hologram of, like, this person.
Also, the like, Billie Holiday thing is so bizarre. I don't know. Like of all...
Because those are the people they could get the rights to. Nobody
yeah,
else would sell off
yeah.
the
Yeah, they couldn't get the Whitney
rights.
One. They wanted the
no.
Whitney one so bad.
That was what was so sad about it. It was people who, like, maybe did need the money, like, someone from, like, Billie Holiday's estate or whatever, but it's still, like, it's so fucked up, like, forced to perform for each Eternity,
yeah.
like such a Black Mirror-y thing. Ugh. So it's also interesting that it failed. Maybe he just because he went bankrupt, but maybe just it didn't seem like anyone ever went there. I think there just wasn't as much of a market for it as people thought.
Well, yeah. people like are Simone. Interested in people are interested in a hologram right now popping up as like a novelty in the middle of like an award show or Coachella or something. But I don't even think now if you did that anybody would care. But at the time it was like nobody knew that we could do a hologram Tupac. So when that happened at Coachella, everybody was like, "Oh my God, this is amazing! This is so uncanny." But like if it's the main event, if it's something that yeah. you're going and expecting, and you expect a certain level. Level of performance, I use
well,
like heavy
also,
scare quotes. And, yeah, I don't know.
It's uncanny if it's somebody who's a real person and who's dead, you know?
Right.
If it's somebody who's like an alive person and they want to perform with a hologram of themselves or whatever. Or
that send sounds out dope.
A, or yeah. send out a hologram to perform in places simultaneously, which is one of the things on the Black Mirror they talk about. Like that in a certain way, as long as the person is consenting to do that. But that's what you're saying about selling
right.
off your likeness.
Yeah. It's super weird. Like, I think that there's something somewhat reassuring, even though, like, it would be fully predictable. But if everybody had truly gone wild for hologram fever,
yeah,
I'd be kind of like, what are we doing
no,
right
it's
now?
It's like
so
the, it's
ghoulish
like the,
and weird.
It's like the swan. It's like we pulled back from the precipice
right.
of, like, full yeah. evil. We were like,
right.
just because we can do something awful doesn't mean we have to.
But that's kind of why Simone sucked so bad is because there's no bad consequence for a hologram or an AI robot. Like, Simone's image wasn't lifted from anyone else's.
Right.
right.
It was just fabricated.
Yeah. Like, Hatsune Miku is fine because she is totally fictional. Like,
right.
But again, that brings you into weird issues of...
I mean, it's like slightly unsettling, but with Truman Show, what was really interesting about Truman Show was that it had like a heart and it had someone who was like victimized by this culture. And with Simone, the stakes were so low.
Right.
I mean, the worst that could happen is a bad director who didn't have talent, who didn't have much of like a sympathetic streak to him.
But also
he would just lose his contract or something. They like play the sad strings and he's like, well, this is it. This is the end of my career. It's like, good? I don't know.
Good. Like, good. And that's why it's strange is you would think that especially for a comedy, you would think that there should be these gigantic stakes where you're just like, wow, how ridiculous. Like, it could all go wrong. It could be so terrible. But the worst thing that could happen isn't bad at all.
Well, it's categorized as a satire, and I just don't think it's sharp enough as a satire. Like, I think
it should be about,
because you can have an unlikable protagonist like him that we legitimately don't care about, and we want to see the worst happen to him. We delight in his misfortune, but like, it doesn't ever really lean hard enough into that. It and there's nobody else that like to kind of counteract his like kind of boring sleaziness. There's nothing else going on other than that. So
we would like his daughter to direct a movie.
Sure. Oh man.
It should be about like a really unattractive woman who makes a CGI avatar and tricks everybody.
It's
like
the best
Cyrano
actress.
De Bergerac.
Yeah. Exactly.
Simone de Bergerac.
That's a very good idea. Before we go, I wanted to talk very briefly about giant monsters because the Godzilla King of the Monsters just came out. I haven't seen it yet. I want to see it. I actually liked the last American Godzilla movie pretty well, which I guess is a controversial opinion to have because Godzilla doesn't show up in it for so long. So some people got mad because no sea monster, want to see big monster go boom, I guess, like faster in the movie. But I think it's pretty good. And so I was eager to see how this one turned out.
Is that a found footage one?
No, it's a Fukushima one. It's like it's like a mostly English speaking cast. Our boy Ken Watanabe is in it. Bryan Cranston's in it. It's like basically Godzilla comes back, but he like comes out of the nuclear fallout of the big power plant or the nuclear plant explosion in Japan from 2011.
The new Godzilla went to number one.
Well, good.
Awesome.
Well, it's got all the monsters in it. It's got Mothra. It's got King Ghidorah in it. I just think all of these monsters are so adorable. So I'm always like kind
They're
of rooting
so
for
adorable.
Them.
They're like a cutie rogues gallery.
Yeah. We were kind of having a mini debate over big monsters, I guess, and how interesting they are. Because I think Molly, you brought it up that. Kaiju, like the Godzilla monsters, are all kind of just like big Pokemon, which is a
very
strong
observation. Yeah,
and then I was
like, oh, the Pokemon are like little Godzillas.
Yeah, maybe so.
You know?
But I don't know. I feel like I saw somebody, I can't remember who, I've been staying away from reviews because I just want to see the movie, but I saw somebody refer to Godzilla movies as religious films, and I was like, yeah, that's right. Like they are, it is about a divine punishment. Like that's what these movies
are
about.
Well, it's what we deserve.
Yes. It's always why it's what she deserves. She being
it's
Earth.
It's what she deserves. she being the people of Earth. It's like she's Earth's Godzilla is a woman. Mm-hmm. Somebody on Twitter was like, well, it's not Godzilla. That's how we know. Godzilla is like the punishment for fucking with science.
Yeah.
Emily, who's your favorite of the Godzilla Rogues Gallery?
I like King Ghidorah a lot. I don't know. He's real cute. But I love Godzilla. I just love plain old Godzilla. I love Godzilla's kind of thick. I love when Godzilla... I love the atomic breath. I was saying to Tess, because I was like, you got to try a Godzilla film. And one of the last Japanese Godzilla films, I think there was another one since then, but it came out in 2016, Shin Godzilla, or I think it's called like Godzilla Resurgence or something. But it's directed by Hideaki Anno, who did Neon Genesis Evangelion. So it's like... great. It's hilarious, first of all. And it's just like about infrastructure. It's just about like government bodies like malfunctioning while trying. It's like if Veep had Godzilla, basically. And it's also got like it's got some really amazing what do they call them? Evolutions of Godzilla in it. Godzilla looks pretty normal at parts in parts of the movie.
Pretty small.
I've started to rewatch Neon Genesis Evangelion just because it's coming out soon on Netflix, and I think that that is one of the best big monster galleries, I guess.
Yeah, nuclear big monsters are coming back.
Yeah, there's something very powerful about them.
My favorite is Mothra.
Yeah, Mothra's great.
My mom's name is Martha, and so I think my dad nicknamed her Mothra at a certain point.
Solid reasoning.
We have a Mothra poster, and yeah, I love Mothra just also because she's like a moth queen, and she has those cool attendants who work for her.
Yeah,
who sing the song about her. I love the song.
Oh my god, the Mothra song is so good.
I'll put it on a mix.
Yeah. Please do.
Oh, speaking of which, please subscribe to our Patreon. Patreon.com/nightcall. At the $3 level, if you would like to join and get access to our newsletters and mixes, which we will be delivering monthly.
They're so good, you guys.
Our first one out. It's so great. You definitely don't want to miss out on this, and it'll come to you once a month with our newsletter. But also, give us a night call. Give us a night call about kaiju or big monsters or about dome homes or about Peter Max or whatever.
Or the moon.
Yeah, or the moon. We're always taking moon content at 1240-46-NIGHT. You can leave us a message there. You can give us an email at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. And you can also follow us on social media at Twitter at nightcallpod, Facebook at nightcallpodcast, and Instagram at nightcallpodcast.
See you guys next week.
Bye.
See you on the moon.